the case for evangelism. This is, let me show you a couple of pictures here of let's see if once it starts working, then it continues. And that's a meeting that we had in Chattanooga, in Tennessee. And it's interesting because this guy right here started attending, and he came from New Jersey. They met Jesus in Chattanooga. Isn't that interesting? This couple was baptized on the last day. As you can see from the first two slides, evangelism is not only reaching one demographic, it reaches different demographics, different age groups. So I want to share with you what for me was the deciding and understanding what about evangelism. This slide right here was the paradigm shifting slide. If you look on the screen, you'll see what has worked in evangelism and what is working. I'm interested in stuff that is working. I'm a very pragmatic person. I like stuff that works. I don't know about you, right? But if you have a car, we want stuff that works. We want blenders that work, and we want evangelism that works. So if you notice on the screen, you'll see 1950s, the rise of this young guy called Billy Graham. Remember Billy Graham? Just died this year. His approach to evangelism, which Adventists copied, because we're usually about 20 years behind, like the general Christianity. We just baptize stuff and just rename them. But he started doing mass gatherings in stadiums, and cities will come together. Notice the path that somebody took to come to Christ. Do you see it in the screen? Who do you start with? Who is this person? What's an unchurched person? An unchurched person is somebody who has a memory of church, but is not presently attending. So he grew up Catholic, he grew up Baptist, he grew up Adventist, he grew up religious. So if you're trying to reach that person, what's the pattern to reach them? You see three C's. What's the first one? Christ. So you start off by presentation of the gospel. And then you bring them into, what's the second C? Community. And once they're part of the community, then you, if the church has a cause, you involve them in whatever cause the church has. Remember the five H's: hunger, homelessness, human trafficking, health, and help. That's 1950s to 1980s. 1980s, we had a rise of something called small group movement. We wanna start in the homes first. Who do you start off with? What's your target audience? It's still a what? An unchurched person. You can answer back, it's fine. I just want to make sure you're awake. But what changed in the pattern? What came first? Before you had a gospel presentation, people wanted to feel a part of the community. So people wanted to belong before they believed. So I want to give you Bible studies in your home. We're going to have a small group. Then I want to introduce you to Christ. And if the church had a cause, five H's, they would join it. Over the last 10 years, 40 million Americans stopped going to church. Over the last 10 years, there's been a rise in something called a segment of the population called the nuns. Not Catholic nuns, but N-O-N-E-S. This is especially significant in the last 10 years, where they asked somebody in the last census, what is your religion? And the answer was, none. So if we're going to be successful, and in the northern part of the United States, which is New Jersey, the percentage of nuns is higher than most of the country, except for the northern west coast. But the further north you go, the less religious people are. That's just a fact. Nobody has to like the fact or dislike the fact for it to be a fact. I don't like the fact that I'm bald. Still a fact. So if you wanna reach lost people, you have to understand that these people still exist in New Jersey. Right? There's people that used to go to church that don't go to church anymore. But you have to understand also that there is this right here is the fastest growing demographic in North America. So how do you reach nuns? If you go to a nun who says, I have no religion, I'm not pro or against religion. I'm just indifferent to it. So I'd rather you love me or hate me. I think the worst thing you can do to somebody is ignore them. I'd rather somebody hate religion or love religion than ignore religion. Because when you ignore it, it means it's irrelevant in your life. If you hate it, you still have some feelings. I just got to change those feelings. So how do you reach these people? You notice what the change in evangelism is? How do you start? You don't start with what? With Christ. You start with cause. And what are the causes? Five H's. Then you bring them into community. Then you introduce them to Christ. That's why this process takes 9 months. If you, Wayne Church, follow the process I'm about to outline to you, if you follow it, we will see people coming to Christ in the spring. If you don't follow it, we'll just have a one-week event where some people are going to be blessed, and then we're going to go home and cry about the fact that evangelism doesn't work anymore. But this is entirely up to you. I cannot babysit you from Atlanta. You have to take ownership of the fact that my pastor has 3 churches. I am going to be involved in this process. If you decide to do it, we're going to see people being reached in the spring. Following me? Nuns. These people right here are not primarily asking what is the truth. They're primarily asking, how can you help me? Their first question is not, what is the right day of worship? The question is, my marriage is falling apart, my kids are on drugs, I suffer from depression, I have bad health, I have money concerns, I'm drowning in debt. Can you offer me any solutions? And if we lead with, well, in heaven, none of these things is going to happen. It's like, yeah, I know that. I get that, the heaven stuff. But I need some help with my kids right now. That's why this takes 9 months. Evangelism is like having a baby. You can't have conception, pregnancy, and delivery in a week. That is called when you have conception, pregnancy, and delivery in a week, what is that called? It's called a miscarriage. So what do we do? This is what we call the PPP plan. Number one, we have to understand the first P is preparation. We want to understand it's like having a baby. In order to do that, before we give people Bible studies about the doctrines, we have to teach them that the Bible is applicable to the stuff they're dealing with every day. I created a Bible study whose only 8 lessons that you can share very easily with your friends, neighbors, sons, daughters, mother-in-law, if you get along with her, it doesn't matter. And when your pastor tells me, this is how many I need of this, I will send them to you. These are 8 Bible studies. What do they touch? Hurt, friendships, relationships, money, failure. These are things that are universal needs of human beings. What do we want to do during 8 weeks or 8 sessions? We want to establish a rapport in a relationship with people so they understand that the Bible addresses what they're dealing with right now. Number 1, early in the process. Number 2, we are asking that the local church, this is number 1 today, number 1. The local church over the next 9 months dedicate 1 Sabbath out of the month for a guest speaker or the local pastor that will train and motivate the members in 1 area of evangelism. So we want to dedicate the first Sabbath or the third Sabbath or the fourth Sabbath or the second Sabbath. I don't care which one it is. But you need to, this is the first Sabbath of the month, so this will be next month in October. Intercessory prayer, how to give Bible studies, how to connect with your community, what service is all about, how to pray in a way that God intervenes, how to make friends. I have the list of it. I will pass it to your pastor. But 1 Sabbath out of the month, one of these areas is covered. Following me so far? If you have, raise the hand of the person next to you. Say, I'm following, Pastor. Okay. All right. Number 3. From now until we have our evangelistic series, we need to have something called a season of service. This works fantastically during the holiday season. What is the season of service? What is it? Let me show you the book. So we will be providing a book for every church member. In that book, it contains 3 things. Number 1, this is a 40-day campaign, by the way, 40 days. So you can start it in October, that goes through Thanksgiving, or you can start it at Thanksgiving, that goes through Christmas. You can start it at the beginning of the year. I don't care when you do it, but it must be done. The earlier you do it, the better. This is what happens. We have this idea that to serve people, we have to stop what we're doing in our lives and go serve somebody. What this book is trying to help you understand is you can live a life of service doing what you do normally. Do you eat? How many people eat here? So you don't have to stop your life to eat. Eating is part of your life. But why, since you already eat, why don't you strategically say, once a week we're going to invite somebody who's far from God to eat with us? Do you play? In other words, you do anything for fun? Anybody here? I see faces that have a lot of fun and some faces that I'm still praying for you. What do you do for fun? I don't hear any. Is it because we're in church? Is it? But what do you do for fun? You ride a bicycle. So if you do something for fun, everybody eats strategically. Everybody does stuff for fun. Like, what? If I ride a bicycle, who can I invite to ride bicycle with me? If I like to run, who can I run with? If I like to go on walks, how can I, when I walk, pray strategically for my neighborhood? How can I, what I do every day, I eat every day, I play, I work, whatever I am doing, it's about the intentionality behind it. So this book has a devotional that you will read for 40 days. You read the devotional, and at the end of the devotional for that day, there are three suggestions you can do to serve people in your life that have no cost to it. Number two, is easy to do. Anyone can do it. And number three, there's options. The best way this works, I'm addressing you now because the pastor understands the process. I want to make sure you understand the process. The best way this works now is over that 40 days of service. This is the Cadillac plan. You know, the healthcare has like the Cadillac plan and like the regular plan and the like pray to God so he can heal you plan, right? So we're going for the Cadillac plan. The best way this works is when you have a board meeting. You have all your directors of departments. Over those 40 days of service, every department will pick one service activity. The book has 101 service activities that you could do. So deacons will say, over the next 40 days, we as deacons, on the second Sabbath of those 40 days, we're going to go out to a nursing home. Other people will say, we're going to clean up a street. Other people will say, we're going to go in a gas station and say, can we clean your toilets? We just want every department, the youth department, the women department, the men department. Wouldn't it be amazing if the music department over the 40 days said, okay, one of those 40 days, we're going to go as music and do this specific service activity. We want to touch this community as much as we can with multiple service activities. And when they ask, what are you doing this? We're just trying to show God's love in practical ways. As you serve, people are going to ask why. You will receive a red t-shirt that says Season of Service. You'll get your book, and we'll do this over 40 days. That makes sense? Turkeys on Thanksgiving, veggie turkeys. The turkeys are vegetarian. They don't eat meat, so it's good. You can give them out. Let me give you a couple of examples. This church right here, they had health screenings. They had water angels. They just went downtown when it was really hot and gave out water. And the water bottles had like the logo of the church. They had Operation Backyard, which is they went on a Sunday and cleaned up a backyard of a elderly lady. We had a blood drive. We had Christmas in July, where we went to a low-income neighborhood and had like a one afternoon VBS with puppet show for the kid. It's about motivating and involving every single member of the church. So if you're here, you can serve. If you breathe, you can serve. This is what one church did. If you see this right here, this is the fence. This is the church over here. And this is the fence that divides the neighborhood and the church. Then the deacon said, we can't preach, but we can paint. So they went over to the neighbor's house. In most driving churches, neighbors don't know you who you are. They just see coming and going, but they have no idea that you exist. Like, what's the name of this neighbor right here? What's the name of the neighbor back there? What's the name? What's going on in their lives? They went over to the house and said, can we paint your house? And the neighbor said, sure, but we don't have any money. And he's like, no, we're doing it for free. Why? because we're showing God's love in practical ways. They're like, all right. They brought paint from their work, painted the house. The other neighbor said, who painted your house? The church did. Can they paint mine? Sure. They painted three houses. They've been there 25 years, never met their neighbors. Neighbors never came to church. They closed off the street, had a block party with bouncy houses and food people eat and drinks and face painting for the kids, invited the neighborhood to come. This is not a religious activity. They just wanted to serve the community. But it breaks down barriers. It breaks down barriers. There's an activity of service. You following me? All right. Then, right before our meeting, say our meeting is, it's not going to be this date. I'm just going to put a date to it. So say our meeting is March 15. On February the 1st, we will start the last 40 days before the meeting. We're going to start the church's preparation, spiritual preparation for, it's like the Lamas class, right? Where the mom prepares and this is going to happen and it's going to hurt and you're going to have to breathe and you take classes and all this stuff. We have to have a preparation that we do outside the church and we have to have a preparation that we do personally. You will also get this book. And it's a similar process as a season of service. The only difference is this is for the church itself. So every day over 40 days, leading up to the week of the meeting, we're going to have a Facebook Live prayer connection at 7 in the morning. If you cannot watch it at 7 in the morning, you can watch it at 12 at noon because it's going to be Facebook Live is going to be recorded, so you can watch it. On day one, we're going to pray for our neighbors. On day two, we're going to pray for the preacher. On day three, we're going to pray for the sound system. Don't you know that every time we do evangelism, something in the sound system breaks? Isn't that crazy? We're going to pray for the parking. We're going to pray for the musicians. We're going to pray for the kids. We're going to pray for the men, for the women, for the couples, for the people that are far from God. So what we're doing is we're bathing in prayer. Intercessory prayer is taking God seriously, even when the people we're praying for do not. That's what intercessory prayer. So you get this book. You connect at 7 in the morning, 15 minutes. We pray that we go about our day. It's called God City, My City. Another important, and this has to be a local, another important element of our evangelistic endeavor are Bible workers. These are people that are local church members and people that the church might hire that are going to be intentionally in all those connections that we've made by service, giving them Bible studies. Not exclusively the Bible workers, but joining us in the people that we're connecting with. Then finally, we have arrived in this evangelistic moment. And there is one more thing that we do before we start that I want you to listen to me very carefully, because I have never gotten resistance from guests from what I'm about to say. Very little resistance from guests. A lot more resistance from members. And it's this. We are going to have a pre-registration for this event. The pre-registration is a website that will be live 1 month before the meeting, that you will register, or you can register in a piece of paper, and somebody from the church is going to enter your information, that will produce name badges. So during those 8 nights, everybody will have a name badge with a barcode. So when people arrive, they are scanned at the door. You don't have to write anything on paper. People are used to going to conferences and events that have name tags. So what do name tags and name badges, how is that beneficial? Number one, it helps us keep track of the attendance in a much better organized fashion. Number two, you, and this is the most important one, you can look people in the eye and call them by their name. I can say, Stefan, welcome. There's nothing sweeter sounding than the sound of your name. I've had very few guests complain about it. They're like, yeah, we want to create your name badge. Can you fill out this paperwork here? And guests come and, yeah. But when we ask the members, I built this church. I've been in this church for 40 years. People know who I am. Why do I need to move? And they make a scene in front of the guests. So imagine the message that it sends to a guest that you don't wear a name tag, but they have to. So immediately they feel like, what's going on here? But if they see everybody with a name tag, including people in registration, including the preacher, they're like, okay, this is what we do for everybody. So my wife is the evangelistic coordinator of the Southern Union. Everything that I'm explaining to you here, most of it came from her mind on how to do it. So she needs to have, before we leave here, some contact people that she can communicate, because we do everything computerized. So we need to have some people that know how to input information. Everything has a purpose. The people in the parking lot are going to have shirts that say, Jesus is greater than my problems. So the first impact in the parking lot, when a guest comes, we're sending a message. It's a branding thing. There's people greeting at the door. There's somebody registering. And there are ushers inside the sanctuary. So what's happening? When a guest comes, he or she is going to be greeted at least 4 times before they sit down. Somebody in the parking lot, somebody at the door, somebody in registration, and somebody inside here. So the moment they sit down, you know that guests decide whether they want to come back or not based on the first 10 minutes that they're in a place. So everything's intentional. So Kathy, you want to come and share anything about pre-registration that they must know and understand? Or anything about anything that I've said that you want to add?
Something about pre-registration I just wanted to add. It has been proven in the years that we've been working doing this that if you pre-register for something, there is a 60% chance that you will actually go to it. There's just something about your psyche, about a person, like, oh, I registered for that. Even though the event is free, because we don't charge for the event, but there's something that says, oh, I registered for that. I kind of got it. I have to go to that. There's a sense of commitment. So when you sign up for something, it makes you kind of go. So when we pre-register, that kind of gives us a sense of, like, I signed up, I'm going. And the same thing for the people in the community. And it gives a real good sense of professionalism. You remember this morning we talked about, what were the two things that my husband mentioned? When the father had, remember, the whole household was ready and prepared? There was two things that were talked about. It was excellence. Oh, this young man was listening. I love it. How old are you? 12. Look, this young man of 12 years old was paying attention. The first thing was excellence. That's right. And the second thing was intentionality. So everything that we do sends a message of excellence and intentionality. So we want to be prepared from the very beginning. So we're already thinking about the guests that are coming right now in the month of September. Who is going to be coming through our doors in the spring? We're already preparing ourselves, right? With excellence and intentionality in all that we do. So yes, I'm looking forward to working with your staff, with your team here. I have no doubt that it'll go well. So there's a couple of teams that we would need to work with. We'll need a parking security. We'll need a what I call the deaconess team. They take care of everything inside. The greeters team, they take care of everything that has to do with like the welcoming as the when they walk in the door. We need the registration team. We need the guest artist host, which is the person who takes care of the artists that will come and sing in the evenings. We will have the children's committee. So, because we like to have a program for the children, that's very important, especially if you want someone to come out from the community to come. They, more than likely, they'll come if they have some form of programming for the children. So we'll have to, we'll need to have that team, and we'll need a committee leader for that. We'll need someone to kind of direct the platform, so we'll need that person. And transportation. So that will be the person either helps to bring the artist back and forth, or the person that will help coordinate the guests who will be needing transportation to come to and from the church. Those are the committees that we'll need.
So I can't emphasize this enough. It's important that we pre-register. That gives us an idea if we have to do two sessions in the evening or one or what. And then finally, we come to the proclamation. This is my job. This is what God has gifted me to do. Like God gifted my wife to be an organizer, and he gifted me by being a speaker. I don't sing. If I sing, we probably baptize more, but people say, "Yeah, I'll go forward if you stop singing." My job is to preach, and I'm going to preach 10 messages, 2 on each Sabbath morning and 8 in the 8 nights. These are the messages that we're preaching at night. It's hard to see, so don't worry about the fact that you can't see it. Opening night, we talk about epic fail. We're going to talk about we all have problems. We're going to talk about rest on Monday night. That's the Sabbath message, but in a way that's very engaging. We're going to talk about finances on Tuesday. Relationships and family, also being part of the family of God on Wednesday. We're going to talk about healing, and on Thursday night, we're going to have an anointing service, expecting God to heal emotionally, physically, spiritually, and relationally. Friday night, we're going to talk about change, and then Hope Wins is the last presentation. And finally, once the people make decisions to follow Jesus and are baptized, we want to make sure the people that join stay. So what do we do for preservation? Here's, again, another resource. This resource is for the newly baptized members, and we want to teach them 4 specific G's. It's called GROW. Number one, we want them to understand the gospel. We talked this morning, if you don't get the gospel, you're going to be just a Pharisee with a 3-piece suit. You're not going to be able to, an unconverted person who's not connected to God is just a religious person, but we want converted people. So we want to teach people the gospel. Once they were baptized, we want to make sure they get it. Number two, we want to teach them how to give systematically. Number three, we want them to use their gifts for God. And number 4, we want them to understand that we're a global, not a global, but we're a global organization. It's not just Wayne Church in New Jersey. We're part of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. It's a global mission-minded organization that wants to preach Jesus to the world. So hopefully by the end of the 9 months, we will look back and remember September the 1st when we first talked about it. And that's the 411, as the kids say. So what I'm going to need from you is when you have your next board meeting, I will need the next two important items is what's the Sabbath a month that you're going to dedicate for mission, and when does the season of service start? So I can send the books. So how many books do you need of season of service so I can send them? I have them in English and Spanish, if somebody prefers to read in either one of those languages. Then, once we start the new year, then we go to the season of prayer, and then a month before all the pre-registration and the committees and stuff, that will be working with my wife. Are there any questions? It's always a great day when you are promised to have a one-hour presentation, but you can condense it into 30 minutes. Leaving before the 1 hour is always good, right? Leaving after is no good. Extending it further is no good. But I'm going to have 5 minutes for questions that you may have, and then we're going to drive down to Virginia to say hi to my brother and then get on a plane and go back home. All right, any questions that you have? Does it seem... It's pretty comprehensive, but it's an important process. And for me, the most important thing is not a goal of souls, but a goal of following the process. If we follow the process, the result will come. Right? If you follow the process of having a baby, you're like, I'm taking care of the baby, you eat well, you rest well, the likelihood that the conclusion of those 9 months is going to be a healthy baby, it gets so much higher than if you just like wing it. Yes. The most baptized, about 750 in Atlanta, but that was a citywide. And I don't think I've had, 12 would be from 12 to 750. So it depends on the church. It depends on how, once again, it's all up to the church. If the church creates and follows the season of service and follows the training monthly and follows the prayer, we'll see much better results. And frankly, I am interested in this being like a culture shift change versus like how many were baptized during that week. Like how I have conversations with churches that are still baptizing a year later of the ones that started coming to the meeting during that week. I remember this one guy started coming to the meeting during the week. His first exposure to Adventism. And came the whole week, really enjoyed it. The church adopted him. They started giving him Bible studies. They sent me the video of his baptism that happened a couple of weeks ago. And this is something that we did back in early spring. So it's not, for me, it's not as much as like what we, of course we want to have fruit, but you have people that are being engaged at different stages, and our job is to call and God will give those results. All right?
It's not about a person, it's not about a persona that's coming to
that evangelism is something that you, you know, this is a lifestyle for you and your church. It's something that is a part of who you are every month, all the time, not just leading up to an event. So you start doing it now, you start liking it, it becomes who the church is. So even after the series is done, you're like, wow, that was awesome. We've been doing this for 9 months. Let's just keep doing it, right? Let's just keep doing this. This is a part of who we are. The other thing is, you know, start, you're starting to invite, you're doing the trainings monthly. Start having the Bible study. Start working with people. Don't wait till the very end to start having the Bible study. Start working with people early from the very beginning. You start seeing people having interest in, you know, Bible studies as you're meeting them, as you're going out to the community, as you're doing service. Start working with them. Don't wait to the very end to do that, because too often we wait to ask the question, we wait to do the invitation, we wait to, like, you know, organize the small groups of Bible studies. We wait, and then, you know, it just extends it. So start asking now. You know, you've been coming for a while to our church, so, you know, have you ever thought about becoming a part of the family? Or I see that you've been doing some Bible studies. You know, what's holding you up from making that decision? So ask the question, because people sometimes, they're just waiting for somebody to ask for them to make that decision. So if, I know the pastor doesn't preach here every Sabbath, but whoever's turn it is, when you're preaching, you know, make invitations for people to come up and make a call and make a decision for Christ as you're doing that. So all along, be thinking, you know, about asking people to make this decision.
Yes. There is not a decline, there is actually an increase. Because one of the benefits of people not being as churched is that they have no concept of Sabbath. So if you present the Sabbath from a perspective of most people are unbalanced in their life, and Sabbath was created to bring balance into our life. To remind us we're not human doings. We're human beings. So the Sabbath was given by God for us to understand we're not worth, because our worth is not in what we can produce. Our worth is in who we are and because He created us. So when you present the Sabbath from that perspective, especially with the nuns, they eat it up. They love it. They're like, you mean there's a mandatory vacation once every 7 days? And this is fantastic. And I'm going to get connected to my Creator and get connected to my family. They eat it up. They eat it up. They love it. So the reason why it's only 8 nights is because we're starting 9 months prior, giving the Bible studies to the people. So when I'm just a delivery. I'm the surgeon. I'm the midwife, right? I'm the doctor that delivers the baby. I cannot deliver babies that have not been conceived. So what's the, in traditional evangelism, what we do is we want to teach people in 3 weeks all of our doctrines. It's really hard to become an Adventist in 3 weeks. That's why our rate of disconnection is 49%. So the people, 100 get baptized, 49% end up leaving the church. Because we wanna compress into 3 weeks something that should be better explained over 9 months. It's much easier to present a Bible study about a mark of the beast or healthy living or pork or whatever it is. It's much easier to do it in a home sitting front when people can ask questions versus to have a blanket presentation where everybody's in a different level. Imagine Isn't it easier for somebody to accept a concept of the mark of the beast when they've been going through several Bible studies, you have a relationship with them, versus a Catholic that shows up to church the first day, and on the first day they come, here's this hammer, bah! And that's why there's a drop-off, because evangelism is reduced to, we don't do anything in the community, we're up to ourselves, and then a month before the meeting, we have Bible workers come in, and then they round up some interest, and then we bring them to church for 3 weeks or a month, and we present all these truths they've never heard before, and we expect them to stop smoking, stop eating pork, stop dancing, stop listening to Luis Miguel, we want them to stop getting married, stop having sex outside of marriage, stop clubbing, cut their hair, shave their legs. You know, we want to do all these things in a month. And then people like, I can't breathe. This is a million things. Isn't it better to do it over time? And evangelism takes time. That's why we serve them. And then we take our time to explain to them. Understand the Sabbath. This is what it means. Let's worship on the Sabbath together. And this is when it starts and when it ends. And this is the blessing of a healthy. So they embrace the message. We found in 8 nights, even though it's much shorter than 3 weeks or a month or 6 weeks, that we have a 40% higher retention rate. Why? Because of the 9 month prep. But once again, we can't babysit you for 9 months. You have to say, I'm buying this. I like it. Come back in the spring, Pastor Hernandez. If you tell your pastor, I'm not going to get upset. If you tell the pastor, I don't think this is going to work for us. We're not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to feel any type of disenchantment. I have enough meetings in my union that I do. I do 7 of these a year. I'm leaving my union to come here because I prayed about it and God said go, so I'm committed to coming. So if you decide this is not for us, you've heard what was expected of you. If you decide this is not for us, when we don't, not that we're not ready, because God is not looking for ready people. God is looking for willing. Because no church is ever ready. There's always going to be something, some difficulty. So don't think, well, we're not ready. No church is ever ready. The question is not, are we ready, but are we willing? And if we're willing, God will ready you. So you have to meet as a board, talk to your pastor. If you embrace it, he'll let me know. We'll send the books and the materials. We'll be back in the spring. If not, we're still friends. Everything's cool. We love each other. And we continue on what we do. All right? Let me pray for you. Heavenly Father, we lift this evangelistic series into you right now. If it's your will you make that clear to us? In Jesus' name, amen. All right, blessings. Thank you. We'll go down New Jersey Turnpike and pay more tolls.
Of course, we know, everybody knows the way around the turnpike, but we don't want him to end up in Ohio. He's got to go south. Anyway, Pastor prayed for us. We heard it. We saw it. I know there's an initial excitement whenever we hear something new, and especially presented in a very, very nice and palatable way. Here's the thing, though. I know that's the case. And then life takes over, and in 3 weeks' time, we're like, oh, what was that? Yeah, something happened, right? So the challenge is, especially if you're on the board, Jane, don't leave. No, because we need your money. So especially if you're on the board, that we need to keep this on the front burner. This must not allow to sort of be pushed to the back burner and fall behind the stove. We don't exist here for ourselves. Like I said this morning, if I do say something that you agree with, you know, then you're more than welcome to say something. Because here's the thing, if I don't hear anything, then I'm wondering, oh, gosh, maybe they don't like what I just said. We don't exist here for ourselves. Beautiful stained windows, but that's lovely. They don't go anywhere when Jesus comes. Only people will go somewhere when Jesus comes, and it is people that matter. God has gifted us and blessed us with this beautiful facility and with this beautiful congregation and all the resources that we have, but he's given us all this for a purpose. And the purpose is not to just sit and think, oh, wonderful, lovely, get great music. No, we exist because somebody else is here in this vicinity or in your vicinity of your life that God is waiting to touch, but he needs you to be the conduit of the touch. So that's the challenge. So when you go home, when we go home, and when the week starts, our prayer can't just be, oh, that was a beautiful presentation, and yeah, let's do it. No. Lord, keep that fresh. Don't let life and routine and distraction dilute this, and so that it then disappears into the background noise of our busyness. It's not something that we do and then it's gone again. No, this is a process, and processes come with all these lovely dynamics of excitement and quietness and a bit of resentment and excitement again. And so all this up and down, and all that will lie ahead. But we don't walk through this by ourselves. We have God with us, and we have each other. And may God continue to give us the realization how much people mean to him. You mean this much to him. And the John Doe and the Jane Doe on the street means just as much to him. So if God means that much, if we mean that much to him, then all these other people mean that much to him. But we are the ones that he wants to use to touch them and to reach out to them. So, Pastor already ran out. Is he warming up? Now, I wanted to just, wait for him to come back there. Now, I wanted to thank you both for taking this on. I know this is outside of the Southern Union. You traveled north. Came and there he is. Wonderful. So, Pastor, we want to thank you and your wife for coming to New Jersey, dealing with all the tolls and all that interesting. The interesting philosophy that exists on New Jersey's roads. Let's put it that way. In the South, there's none like that. So, maybe in Atlanta, but. Now, I want to thank you for coming up. I want to thank you for being willing to take this on. I know you travel everywhere, but I want to thank you for coming to New Jersey. And we look forward to the next 9 or however many months. I quickly calculated this. You know, this may be an early birth. But we'll... Because we... No, not premature, but... a little early. We haven't fixed the date yet. And so once we've done that, then, you know, we'll keep us all informed. And so we all sing from the same song sheet. But for now, I would like to thank you as well.